Blog Talk Radio.
From the studios of Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up for a Monday, October 26th, year 2015. 57 degrees, cool, chilly, sunny skies, which means it's October weather, it's baseball weather. Sports fans are superstitious. Met Fanan and SNY.TV editorial producer Andrew Visano is one of them. He was on last week. The Mets made it to the World Series. So I said, hey, do you want to come back on again? And he said, sure. And he joins us now. Hello, sir. Before we talk about the World Series, take us through what last week was like. You jumped up and down a bunch.
There was not a lot of sleeping. There was a lot of working. But it was all in good fun, as obviously the Mets play game one of the World Series tomorrow. And we...
Can you believe that you're still even saying that sentence? And we've lost Andrew. Hold on a second. This is what happens when you try to leave New York City buildings. You lose people. We're going to keep this rolling. Going to give it a second here. Hello, welcome back. So as you were saying, you know.
As I was saying, the Mets play the World Series on Tuesday, and you know, here we are still writing about the Mets in late October.
Can you believe that you're uttering this sentence, that the Mets are in the World Series?
No. Definitely not. It still really hasn't sunk in yet. It's sort of been a surreal, sort of out-of-body type experience where I know I'm watching the Mets and I know they're playing in the playoffs and now they're going to be in the World Series, but it hasn't really quite sunk in. It hasn't hit me. I just think it might be the long hours and just the constant work that's been over the last few weeks, but again, I can't complain.
The question I wanted to ask you last week, and I think I asked you it at like 12:30 in the morning one night, and I never got a response, is can you enjoy this? As a Met fan who's working, can you enjoy this?
I can enjoy it. I mean, I sort of have a weird line between journalist and fan. Everyone that really knows me knows I'm a Met fan, but that doesn't mean I'm not a journalist as well. So it's a weird line that I sort of straddle, and it's, you know, that's a whole other discussion. So, no, I definitely enjoy it. There's no doubt about it. But then I also buckle down and get my work done and write about this team, just like any journalist would.
And it's a very fun team to write about. Let's start looking at this series. And first questions first. So much of what changed this season for the Mets was Yoenis Cespedes. Do you believe Cespedes will be himself come tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think so. He keeps pointing to that it wasn't the, perfectly apropos for this podcast, is that it wasn't golf that caused the issue. He said he's golf pretty much every day during the season whenever he can. So that's not an issue. He blamed it more on the lack of a locker, of a weight room, in Wrigley Field, so he was forced to do push-ups, which he rarely does. So he said the push-ups for 2 days straight sort of tweaked his shoulder a little bit, and that caused the injury more than or over golfing. And he actually has said that if he feels good, he will go golfing before the World Series game. So we'll see how that goes, but, he says he's 100%. I'm sure they've given him just about as much injections and shots you can imagine, as much as a human can possibly take. So I think he'll be fine. He might not be able to feel his arm, but it won't hurt him, that's for sure.
And Kansas City has a lot of fantastic golf courses, home, of course, to Tom Watson. One of the things that would scare me if I'm a Met fan when you look at the Royals is how the Royals got to the World Series in the first place, which is the sensational and unbelievable first-to-home play by Lorenzo Cain. What concerns you most about Kansas City? Is it that kind of speed that they have?
Well, the Royals match up really nicely against the Mets. Their team team that really puts the ball in play. They don't strike out a lot, which obviously has been, you know, the Mets pitchers' sort of advantage in theory so far. They've been striking out a lot of people, and when they do get, you know, wet runners on, they've been getting the outs without putting the ball in play. That's not going to be the case against the Royals. They are a contact hitting team. They hit really well. They do well. You know, just getting the ball in play and letting the fielders do the work. And, you know, with the Mets sort of subpar middle infield, you know, Wilmer Flores is kind of a big, lanky guy. His defense at shortstop is the best. Murphy, you know, obviously has had a sort of historic run at the plate, but he's still been a Murphy in the field. So it's going to be interesting to see. I was kind of hoping the Mets would end up playing the Blue Jays because they're power threats, but they're also strikeout threats. So, you know, the Mets pitchers could sort of live and die by the home run and live and die by getting strikeout. But I think the Royals match up really well against the Mets pitchers. So, again, it's going to come down to seeing, you know, Jacob DeGrom doesn't have to gut it through six innings or maybe can cruise through seven and two-thirds or something like that before he hands off to the bullpen. And, you know, getting Harvey, Syndergaard, and Matt, the four young guns of the Mets rotation just sort of limit the damage against the Royals because you know they're going to put runs on the board because that's what they've been doing.
Talking to SNY's Andrew Visano about the World Series, you can obviously see all the pregame and postgame coverage you'd ever want on SNY beginning at 6 Eastern tomorrow. When you look at the NLCS, what was so staggering was how little the bullpen had to be used besides Familia because the starting pitching was that good. You start with Matt Harvey, you then go to Jacob DeGrom, then Syndergaard, and then Steven Matz. Matz is the one guy who's been having trouble getting you length. The other guys have been giving you length. Let's start with this. Did you agree with Terry putting Harvey first, then DeGrom?
Yeah, I think definitely that DeGrom is going to benefit the most from this long layoff that they've had. He obviously has been pretty tired and pretty fatigued with these last two starts that he had. Obviously, he's turned out some great efforts, but still took a lot out of him. So this week off is probably best for him than anyone else. And then, you know, guys like Harvey going game one, he has the chance to sort of step up and dominate. And where the Royals pitchers really don't have that, obviously they've had some great pitching performance, but they've also had some really bad ones. So there's a chance that the Mets can come out with a one, maybe 2-0 series lead and come home, you know, up 2-0 in the series. So, you know, I think the rotation sets up nicely for the Mets. That's definitely their strength and definitely the Royals' weakness. In terms of their starting pitching because their bullpen is unbelievably good. So if the Mets are going to strike, they're going to have to strike early and try and knock starting pitchers out. But in terms of game four, you know, with Steven Matz not really giving the Mets length, Chris Young's not really giving the Royals much length either. So that's definitely going to be a battle of the bullpens where you're going to have to ask your relievers to give you three or four innings in each, you know, for each team. So it's going to be interesting to see how that game plays out, and especially if it's a deciding game, how much, you know, one team may throw many pitchers as they can at the situation.
Yeah, and the second part of that, obviously, is the Met bullpen. Familia's been fantastic. Who concerns you most in the Met bullpen, and who suddenly becomes an important piece that has not been?
Well, who doesn't concern me in the Met bullpen? Because most of the Met bullpen outside of Familia has been throwing pretty much straight fastballs, and when they've been throwing the fastballs, they are not moving at all. So, you know, outside of a couple guys, like when Reed or Clifford have their breaking stuff on, they can be good. But the problem is their breaking stuff just hasn't been there a lot lately. So we talked about this today, is that, you know, someone like Hansel Roadway is probably going to get into a big spot for the Mets, you know, in the sixth or seventh inning of one game. You know, a game where it might be too early for them to go to Cologne and not late enough to go to one of their, you know, more dominant pitchers like Familia. So it's going to be interesting to see how Nice, Cologne, and a guy like Hansel Robles play into the series because, you know, the rest of the bullpen just has not been good outside of Series Familia.
And Bartolo's just been unbelievable.
Bartolo's been unbelievable all year. I know he's had obviously struggled, but he's just sort of a sideshow unto himself where, you know, Mets fans have really embraced this guy, for better or for worse. course, but everyone seems to love Bartolo now, and I'm glad he's sort of getting the national exposure that we haven't seen. You know, the Mets fans have been lucky to see the last 2 years, but, you know, he's just sort of become a I don't even know. He's like an old, fat, beautiful man.
Hey, it's a big sexy. There's a reason why he's gotten that nickname. Sorry. Lucas Duda finally struck the ball well towards the end of the NLCS. Who is the most important offensive piece for the Mets besides Daniel Murphy?
Well, obviously, you got to hope that Daniel Murphy stays hot, so you know, we'll see how that goes, especially with the playoffs. But, you know, guys like Duda, Cespedes, and Wright, you know, they really did not get much out of them in games 1, 2, or 3 of the NLCS. And obviously, a couple of those guys, Duda and Wright, sort of broke out in game 4. But, you know, those are the guys the Mets need to step up. You know, Flores has been doing fairly well. You know, he's not getting home runs, but he's still getting on base at a decent clip in the playoffs since he's taken over for the injured Tejada. But, you know, really, they're going to fall. They're going to live or die by their big 4 batters, including Darren Murphy, and that's right, Cespedes and Duda.
And by the way, the Kansas City forecast is not good.
I think everyone's sort of blowing that up a little more than it could be. People have been saying 90%, but there's other reports that you could see where it clears up around 8, and then it's 25% the rest of the night. So, yeah, they might have to play through some rain, and they're going to do everything in their power to not play and then have to stop. So, if anything, it might be a delayed start, but it looks like it clears up later in the night.
Which is just what you want because, you know, you've already been working all hours, so now you'll get to work even longer.
Yeah, it'll be a late couple of nights. Maybe 4 nights, maybe more, we'll see.
One quick SNY question. Your traffic must be through the roof right now. Fan engagement for this team seems at an all-time high.
Yeah, Mets fans are definitely excited, and they're turning out to read and watch our videos and listen to our podcast, so... You know, it's good for business. Winning baseball sort of helps. What a novel concept.
Yeah, and same thing for ticket sales as well.
Obviously the ratings as well on TV.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you are allowed to give a pick, and I think I know where your pick may go. So let me ask you this first. Can you give a pick?
I can.
Okay.
My pick is Mets in 6. I think, I don't know if they come home up 2-0, but the Royals are definitely going to gut out a couple of games. It's not going to be a breeze like some of the Cubs teams were. Not that I think any of the Cubs teams are really, you know, an easy win for the Mets, but I think the Royals are definitely going to put up a very, very good fight against the Mets, and it's going to be a couple of really, really close games. But I do think the Mets eventually win the series in 6 games.
If you somehow sweep, how stunned will you be? If the Mets sweep.
That might... Let's leave it at that.
Okay, yeah. That'll surprise some people. David Wright has gotten kind of the sentimental, you know, line on a lot of these articles because he has been such a steady staple in this city. How happy are you to see the captain take the field tomorrow night, finally in a World Series?
Oh, I mean, there were times over the last season where, hey, we didn't know Wright was going to ever play baseball again. Never mind, you know, play at this level and make it to the World Series. So, you know, for a guy that's really given his whole career to the New York Mets, this is going to be a really great moment for him and for the organization because they really tied their ship to Wright for a few years there where he was really the only viable player on that team. And he sort of carried them through, and he's carried them through a lot. So, you know, it might be nice for someone else to put the team on their back in this World Series and carry Wright to a championship.
How giddy are you 24 hours out?
I'm good now. I'll go for a run before the game tomorrow, sort of calm my nerves and get into the zone and, you know, just watch some good baseball.
That is the editorial producer of SNY.TV, Andrew Vizzano. You can watch pregame and postgame with all your favorite cast and characters on SNY, the TV home of the New York Mets. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And we will be back in 30.
We're actually not going to be back in 30 seconds. We're just going to keep rolling. That's what we do on Teeing It Up. We keep rolling. And now live from the studios of Teeing It Up in the Swamps, we welcome in for a preview of the National Basketball Association season, our good friend Kyle DeManincourt. Hello, sir.
Hey, Jeremy. How are you?
I'm good. Here we are, opening night, 24 hours away.
Finally. Finally.
Your boy Derrick Rose had a little bit of an issue during the preseason. What do you expect here come the start of the regular season for him and for the Bulls?
Well, you know Derrick Rose, it's kind of hard to expect anything, really. He's the biggest wild card maybe in all of basketball. He just has had some bad luck. I mean, getting popped in the nose first play of practice of the offseason, breaking his cheekbone, I mean, his facial, his orbital area, I mean, that's just bad luck. As it seems to find Derrick Rose wherever he is. He did play, though, in the last preseason game. Apparently, from what they were saying, he looked very good, very quick in this new offense, very up-tempo offense, which really suits his style and his play. It'll be an interesting transition for the Bulls. I mean, we're used to seeing them, obviously, with Coach Tibbs being a defensive unit, having that tough mentality, that grind it out, make you earn every bucket type of team. Now we're seeing kind of a shift, I guess, a changing of the guard with Fred Hoiberg, where they're more offensive-oriented, a different starting lineup. He's actually bringing Joakim Noah off the bench, which I'm not going to lie, it'll be weird at first to see Noah come off the bench. I think it's the right move, to be honest. I think his body has really given up on him the last few years, unfortunately, but I think he'll bring great energy off the bench. So it'll be a transition early on for the Bulls and for Bulls fans. But obviously the biggest thing with this team every year is health. As long as they can stay healthy, I mean, who knows?
How much preseason do you watch?
I watch quite a bit, actually. I mean,
okay.
Pretty much from the start of the off season through preseason until the actual season starts. I mean, I'm pretty locked in to NBA.
You are also crazy. So with the caveat that you can't tell much from preseason, mm-hmm. and some guys are just flat out not playing, and you heard Adam Silver say last week that they're going to take a look at this because most people think that the NBA preseason is too long. What stood out to you?
Well, I do agree with Adam Silver. I think it is a little bit too long. I think it's too many games. And a lot of the games, honestly, they're traveling all over the place. It's not even, you know, on their home court or on their opposing team's court. Some of the games were in Canada and not Toronto. I mean, they kind of travel all over. But I think what you're seeing early on is teams being a lot more cautious with their stars. Whereas in the past, maybe, you know, some of these guys will want to play some preseason games to get a little rhythm going. A lot of teams have a lot of new players this year. That's what I've noticed. Probably the biggest thing that stood out to me in the preseason is just a lot of teams have new faces, new players. They got new systems. So teams are trying to, I guess, develop chemistry early on, which is obviously a difficult thing to do in the NBA. It takes pretty much the entire season before you fully gel. So it'll be interesting. The first couple of weeks, I don't expect great basketball. I expect teams to just kind of go through the motions a little bit, get acclimated with one another and build some chemistry. But hopefully, you know, for the sake of the NBA, the stars will stay healthy. They're already battling some injuries, obviously some of the guys, LeBron included. So hopefully these guys will just get healthy and stay healthy.
It's an interesting point that you bring up with LeBron. He said pretty much straight up, I didn't have a long enough off season. I need another month. And that's a problem, obviously.
We've seen,
though, that the NBA is very much a postseason sport, and especially in the East, if you just get in position, then you can move forward and then worry about it later. If you were David Blatt, what would you do with LeBron? Would you give him a month off? Would you just say flat out, you know, see you come December? What would you do?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, LeBron's going to do what LeBron's going to do. I mean, we saw it last year when he took some time off to go to Miami. I honestly would not be surprised if at some point during the year he did the same thing. He's even hinted at it that, you know, if he needs some time off, he's going to take some time off. I think everybody knows that Cleveland's the favorite and not just in the Eastern Conference. It's a very watered-down Eastern Conference again. Cleveland should have no trouble. Honestly, they should have no trouble getting to the NBA Finals. there's only a handful of teams maybe in the East that has a slim chance. I mean, the Bulls, if healthy, the Heat, if healthy. So, I mean, if LeBron needs the time, he's going to take the time. But at the same time, they have a lot of new players, too. I mean, they need to gel these guys together with all the injuries last year with Kevin Love and Kyrie is going to miss, who knows, maybe the first half of the season. They brought in Mo Williams. I mean, Shumpert's out for the first half of the season. So they got some chemistry things that they got to work on, too. So I wouldn't be surprised if he played quite a bit early on, and then at some point during the year he took some time off just to rest his body, because it's like you said, he's got a lot of miles on his body for his age.
Yeah. Talking to Cobb and Manincore about the NBA, Kyle, there's been a bunch of rule changes this year. There's been some changes, and there's more rule changes when it comes to college, but there are some in the NBA, and then there's a slew of changes in what can be reviewed on the court and what will be sent to Secaucus. Broad terms, is there any rule change or replay change that stood out to you?
You know, the thing about the NBA is they're constantly trying to tweak things. I think it's great. I think it benefits the game. Obviously, there's always, you know, issues with people saying the refs have too much power and, you know, they're missing calls. We need to review this. We need to review that. Nothing really stood out. I mean, I like that they can review out of bounds. I believe that goes back to the caucus. I think that's one of the new changes, or maybe that's still in the hands of the officials. The thing about the rules, they're constantly changing it, but they're not really redefining it. It's almost like, well, we already kind of know that the officials have this power, but the only problem with giving the caucus more power is it's going to take more time for the games to go through. So essentially you're looking at more delays, kind of like what we've seen in baseball, where, yes, the replay is great, but some of these replays in baseball, at least, I mean, they're going a lot longer than they should. So it kind of delays the game. And obviously in NBA, tempo and pace is everything. You don't want these guys sitting for a long period of time because they're looking at a replay. So I think some of the rule changes are good. I think really nothing stood out as far as specifics. I thought everything was pretty much how I would have seen it. But I think it's a good thing that the NBA is at least trying to be, you know, proactive.
Yeah, talking to Kyle DeManincore here about the NBA. Kyle, Flip Saunders tragically passed away from cancer yesterday. What will you remember most about Flip?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough day for, you know, not just for the NBA players and family, but, I mean, just for fans. I mean, if you're a follower of the NBA, I mean, you know how great of a coach Flip Saunders was. It's weird to even say was. Obviously, I didn't know him personally, but you could just read testimonials of former players and coaches and people within the NBA that had so many great things to say about him and how respected he was among the league. It's definitely a big blow for the league, especially after, you know, doctors had said that it was a curable cancer, that they, you know, he was going to be okay. And then the next thing you know, there's a statement out that he had passed away. So it's definitely a shock when you see something like that. You lose a very valued member of the league. I think it's cool what the coaches are going to be doing this year. I don't know if you heard, they're all going to wear a commemorative patch in honor of Flip. So I think that's a really awesome thing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, they just came out today and they said that. So I think that's a great thing. You know, the T-Wolves now, it's remained to be seen what exactly kind of effect it's going to have on them, because Flip built this T-Wolves team. I mean, this is his brand of basketball out there. Youth with a few veterans mixed in. So I hope they play inspired basketball, you know, in honor of him. And I think they will. And I think Garnett will be a great, great leader for that team. But it's still tough to know that, you know, you look at the sidelines during a Timberwolves game, you're not going to see Flip Saunders.
Yeah. Very weird. Let's go through the rest of the preview this week, because obviously you've been on a bunch during various times during the year talking about acquisitions and stuff. So, rather than team by team or player by player, especially since we have only 6 minutes, let's go through it this way. Who do you think is the matchups or the four teams that make it to the Eastern Conference semis and the Western Conference semis?
Well, on the East, I mean, obviously Cleveland. I mean, that's a no-brainer, one of the teams. As far as the other team, I mean, that's a little bit of a toss-up. I honestly do believe Chicago is the second-best team, and obviously I have a little bias, but based off talent, I really do believe that Chicago is the second-best talented team in the Eastern Conference. I think Miami, honestly, is a close third, but Miami may even have more health issues than Chicago. So I'm going to go with my gut and say Chicago, just because I think this is maybe the final hurrah for this core. And I just think, you know, somehow they're going to have another showdown with LeBron at some point. It's almost predestined. But the Western Conference, I mean, that's a complete toss-up. It's maybe the most loaded Western Conference we've seen maybe ever. So I do love San Antonio, obviously. I love their system. They got Popovich. They got winners, leaders. They bring in LaMarcus Aldridge and David West. I do like San Antonio. And, you know, I think the Clippers, I think I like what they did. They, you know, addressed their depth issue. They have a very deep bench this year. Bringing in Paul Pierce, who we know he's a winner. He's got some swag. He's got attitude. He's not afraid to back down. And I think that's exactly the type of guy they needed. I mean, let's face it, Matt Barnes. I mean, was he really scaring anybody? I don't think so. Paul Pierce can actually back it up. So I like the Clippers, actually. I think the Thunder will be tough, too. I think it might take them another year, though, with Donovan, but we'll see what happens if Durant and Westbrook will stick around. But I like Clippers and the Spurs.
The NBA Finals matchup will be, and the NBA champion will be?
I think it's going to be Spurs and Cavs. Another rematch, yes, of the Spurs-Cavs type ordeal. I think the Spurs are going to win it. I know Cleveland is probably by far the most talented team in the NBA, but you look at that leadership and that experience that the Spurs have, and don't get me wrong, the experience that the Cavs got last year, most of those guys in the finals, I mean, you can't, you know, overstate how important that is, but you look at what the Spurs did in bringing in Aldridge and, you know, David West, and Kawhi Leonard is a tough matchup for LeBron. He guards him probably as best as anybody in the league. So I just think the Spurs are just have so many options, so many pieces, and I just think they'd be a tough, tough out.
The most valuable player will be?
I think it'll be LeBron. I think last year we saw the LeBron. People got tired. You get that, you know, you just want to vote for somebody else, I guess. But this year, I think it'll be LeBron, but I think Anthony Davis will be right there. And Kevin Durant might be there as well. I could see Durant coming in third. But I'd go with LeBron right now as the front runner.
Anthony Davis is so good. Your rookie of the year.
Whew. Rookie of the year. Wow. That's a tough one. I do like Karl Anthony Towns. I really do. I know his offensive game isn't as polished as some of these other guys. A sleeper for me, to be honest, I really do like Willie Cauley-Stein. I think he's got such a good skill set, and George Karl is the perfect coach for him. Granted, he's with some other guys that might give him a headache with Cousins and Rondo and Rudy Gay, but I do like Cauley-Stein. But I think Towns will be the rookie of the year.
We can do a whole show on the Sacramento Kings.
For a whole week you could do a whole show on the Sacramento Kings.
Yes, it just fascinates me. I wish there was a Hard Knocks type thing on the Kings, because that would be must-see TV.
That would be fantastic.
Your coach of the year.
Coach of the year. I think Doc Rivers this year. I think this is the year Doc, they finally get over the hump, and they, you know, move beyond deeper in the playoffs. I think Doc is just going to have a great year. I mean, he kind of has to, let's be honest. I mean, you were even talking about him on the hot seat last year. There was some noise about that. So I think Doc has to win, and I think he'll have a great year with his players. So I think Doc Rivers will be coach of the year.
And final thing, because I like to have funny notes to end shows, are you a fan of the new Clippers logo, look, and court?
You know, what's funny is I was actually watching a preseason game last week. It was the Clippers Warriors. I believe it was on ESPN. And I'm looking at the court. I'm like, is this a different look? And I look at it again, and I just did not like it. I didn't think it was appealing, to be honest. I'm more of a retro throwback kind of guy. So I just think they were trying to get too cute with the court design, with the uniform design. But, I mean, let's face it, it's the new NBA. The Clippers got some personalities on that team. So, I don't know, maybe it'll work.
Yeah. Kyle DeMannencourt, NBA preview. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
Enjoy your week. We'll see you for the Sunday Sprint, Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio, Golf News Network, and iTunes.